This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your Rip Me Out the Bolus. I've been acting brand new. Of Weekly Culture Review, I am John Caramonica, a critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
It is 2024. I'm still here. Joe's still here. The chairs are still here. Popcast Deluxe, we prevail. Joe, it's been a long break, rather tortured break, at least for me.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
I'm hydrated.
Yeah, good.
Extremely hydrated. Not going to be insufficiently hydrated anytime in the near future.
Wet January.
Yeah, deeply, deeply, deeply moist January. We're going to talk about something today that you and I have been sort of batting back and forth casually for the last, I would say, a couple of months, but it really seemed to crystallize over these last relatively parched 2 or 3 weeks when people are kind of like fumbling for narrative.
Right. And the holiday break.
Yeah. Speaking of heat in the wintertime.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the heartthrob discussion is back. I think it's alive. I think it's happening. Mm-hmm. I think the way that people are beginning to thirst publicly in regards to certain male leading stars.
What kind of male leading stars?
Straight white male leading stars. Yeah.
Built?
Yeah, absolutely. Mostly.
Tall and short.
Tall and short. I feel like maybe this is a thing that we haven't seen quite so openly in a long time. Mm-hmm. You and I have talked quite a bit about Jacob Elordi, both on and off camera.
Yes.
I did have occasion to see 2 Jacob Elordi productions.
Same, luckily. Blessed.
I'll just preempt by saying in our Priscilla episode.
You were hard on the guy.
I did call him one of our great young Twizzlers, which is, for the record, a candy I love. But he was a Twizzler in that movie. I did think in these other 2 films, Saltburn and The Sweet East, he went 2 for 2. I do want to say that. Just gonna right up front. But
with similar screen time too. He's almost so present through absence.
You can't and almost you can't overuse him because he's too dominant.
But he's been used sparingly in these 3 movies. Like he's having a big run and his big run is going well into 2024. I saw photos from him on set of the new Paul Schrader movie, O Canada, which is going to come out this year. Oh. He's got a little stash going. He's like,
too powerful. This,
the man is booked.
Yeah. Booked and busy.
Yes.
Blessed and blessed. So we're going to talk a little bit about Elordi.
And what he means for the current ecosystem of male heartthrob.
Yes. We're also going to talk about Jeremy Allen White, who had a carved out moment, shall we say, over the holiday season. And there's just a number of other people. We were just running through a list yesterday. We're sort of interested in who's on the scene, who's in, who's out. What does it mean that certain people are in and out?
Yeah. Dudes rock.
At least they do now.
Yeah.
So we'll start with Elordi, and that's going to be the bulk of what we talk about today, because I think, frankly, it's dry season for music.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot happening. There was a Nicki Minaj album, which you may be aware of on your tippies. But other than that, I think it's movie season's where it's at.
Yeah, it's award season also.
That's
so
true.
We saw a lot of these guys at the Golden Globes on Sunday.
Well, saw. We. All those words in quote marks.
Emmys are coming up, you know, Oscar season upon us. But yeah, I'm interested in the idea of the textbook traditional sort of, you know, posters on the wall, magazine cutout heartthrob, yes. And also the anti-heartthrob,
yes,
which I feel like we have a couple of those in the mix too.
Coming.
Yes. That are getting, in fact, thirsted over in a similar way.
Which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about them, because I do feel like the heartthrob discourse is so vast that it actually umbrellas out beyond sort of like classic heartthrobs.
And I think Saltburn is a great vehicle for this because it has both the object of affection and the luster.
Yes.
I mean, as a noun.
Yes.
one who lusts. And Barry Keoghan is Barry Keoghan a heartthrob? I don't know.
Okay, so I was sick, candidly, last week, and I watched Saltburn.
In a fever dream.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, I gotta catch up on Barry Keoghan. Like, I'm not dialed in.
Mm. So you haven't seen Barry Keoghan being a freak in other movies?
No, I haven't.
You haven't seen Killing of a Sacred Deer?
No, I haven't.
Okay. All right.
So I was like, let me dial in. Let me type the words Barry Keoghan interview in the YouTube.com and just see what happens, right? I watched a couple of like early interviews on like Irish television where his accent is like far more intense. Obviously, he's like smoothing it out a tiny bit for American press. But there is a British Vogue tete-a-tete, mm-hmm. Jacob Elordi, Barry Keoghan. Have you seen this?
These guys love each other.
They're vibing. Have you seen this interview?
Not that one, but okay. I've seen a lot of Barry Jacob content over the last 6 weeks.
Okay, so I watched this and there's a very fun moment where Barry says to Jacob, do you think I'm a leading man?
Wow.
Do you think I could be? And Jacob says yes, but I sense ever the faintest hesitation.
I rarely speak English. I speak like Irish English.
No, you have a great accent in the film, though.
Oh, yeah, I do, actually.
Really good.
So do you. I just want to say that.
You're a really talented guy.
No, leave it out.
You're a really talented, handsome guy.
You think so? Because I don't think that about myself.
I think you're a really talented, supremely handsome guy.
Do you think I could, like, lead movies in that?
100% you're a leading man to me.
It's also worth noting Jacob Elordi is about 7'9" and Barry Keoghan is about 3'4".
Yeah.
Like, and in the, like, imagine, for example, I immediately went on steroids and I was just like, and Joe immediately was shrunk in like one of those laser things, like the Rick Moranis movie
and then
whatever.
Put me in your hoodie pocket.
Yes, and took you home with me. There is something on the screen.
This is the plot of Saltburn.
That is the plot of Saltburn. To your point. And I think it was very funny that Barry Keoghan is a little bit like, I'm your puppy dog.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, will you play with me? What are you doing later? Like, I would love to play with you. But I am of the mindset that Barry Keoghan is a leading.
Okay.
I am.
So, and you felt that in Saltburn. Let's talk a little bit about Saltburn.
This place. You know, it's not for you.
Lots of people get lost in Saltburn.
Oh, that's just giving me goosebumps. Look, Pamela.
Oh, no.
I think you're a moth.
Here's what I'll say about Saltburn. If Saltburn was a silent film, I would have enjoyed it so much more.
Really? It looks like a music video.
Sounds great.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds great. I do not think the words in Saltburn were particularly interesting.
Sure.
I really think the way that the camera played up the grand scale of Jacob Elordi, like really emphatically making him even bigger than he is, and by extension making Barry Keoghan smaller, was really powerful. I mean, how much of this are we giving away?
Yeah, I mean,
Do you think they've seen Saltburn?
I think
by
people
now?
At this point, I feel like if you're going to see Saltburn, you've seen Saltburn. Okay. And if you haven't, you've seen the Saltburn memes.
Yes. And also, this is a pro-spoiler podcast.
Yeah.
So, like, just deal
this movie's been on streaming for a month plus now. Yeah. It's a new movie from Emerald Fennell. Her last film was Promising Young Woman. Mm-hmm. She won an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, which is, you know,
happened.
That was a movie.
That happened.
We don't have to relitigate Promising Young Woman. Although it does share a lot of the sort of like style over substance that Saltburn has. In Saltburn.
Very beautiful. Saltburn, very beautiful.
Okay. In parts.
Yeah.
Jacob Elordi, very beautiful film. Beautiful dresses.
Beautiful gowns.
Beautiful eyebrow piercing.
Wow.
Barry Keoghan plays a striving middle class ? Prep school student, Oxford,
yes.
Class of 2006. We'll get into that. He immediately is infatuated with the Jacob Elordi character, who
Felix, great name,
who has an eyebrow piercing, and a lot of friends,
a rich guy, very wealthy,
and
wealthy enough to have an eyebrow piercing and get away with it
in 2000
whatever year it is.
Through happenstance, question mark.
Yes.
It's through serendipity. Mm-hmm. They interact for the first time when Jacob Elordi needs a bike. His bike tire bursts.
And the way that Barry Keoghan plays this is, okay, so I've been looking at a lot, like TikTok has been serving me a lot of like abandoned puppy content for some reason.
Oh, wow.
Like both like heartwarming and extremely dark.
Sarah McLachlan style.
Very extremely. Yeah. That is how Barry Keoghan plays Oliver.
Right.
Abandoned puppy.
Right. Oliver Quick is this character's name, in case you're not ready for the Dickensian journey that you're about to go on. So very quickly, the Felix character takes Oliver under his wing, sort of like Nuggies. Insists on letting him hang out with the cool kids.
Like a human nuggy giver.
Yeah. And then brings him home to Saltburn, his family's estate.
Pats him on the head.
Yeah. Did you buy Jacob Elordi as like
the nice Evelyn?
Guy? Yeah. Like, yeah. What was that dynamic?
The only part of it that I didn't fully understand is look, there's a lot of dare I say missing plot development in this,
which
film.
You get in a montage at the end.
Yeah, and even then, I have a lot of questions.
Right. You have to suspend disbelief to watch.
You have to just accept that Jacob Elordi is like a benevolent king,
sure,
and taking on the serfs, as it were. I mostly believed it because the camera is so in love with Jacob Elordi,
sure,
and is so focused on the particulars, like I was saying before, of his grandness,
yeah,
his stature, that you kind of have to believe. Like, the thing that I didn't totally understand is at some point, looking like halfway through the movie, I'm kind of like, wait, what's the emotional motivation? Like, why does Jacob Elordi need a pet?
Well,
and also, how does Oliver know that Jacob Elordi needs a pet?
Well, you get a little bit of exposition when they arrive at Saltburn, and they're like, he did this before.
But how would Oliver know that?
Right. Well, they tell him.
No, but I'm saying, how would he know that
prior?
Yeah. How would he even know that on day one?
He thinks that because, you know, he's playing up like, oh, my father just died. Like, he's playing up the trauma.
Of course.
And Elordi's character
responding to it.
Yeah, nursing him back to health.
I guess Baby to Bert. Me, here's what I really wanted to know, and we're just going to spoil the hell out of it. In that montage at the end, what I would have loved is Oliver at age 15 seeing Felix
plotting
on
him.
Social media, applying to the same college at Oxford. Because at Oxford, I'm pretty sure you have to apply to individual colleges. So like studying to get into the same college. Like, at that point, then that's where the sociopathy
that's
really
the plot of the Taylor Swift song Mastermind.
All by design, 'cause I'm a mastermind.
That's really what should have been playing over the closing montage.
Our future career will be translating Taylor Swift songs into the
movie plot lines. Yeah. So basically what you see over the course of some tonally messy hours in Saltburn is Oliver plotting on Felix's family, which include Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike, A++.
Incredible. Save the movie, truly.
Give her all the awards.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The style, the vocal affect, the tics, like all of it, the kind of like the eyes that are saying nothing but saying everything at the same time. Like eyebrows that somehow look completely flat, like out of control.
And she's really playing on her Gone Girl character. Like, this movie wishes it was Gone Girl. Like, it wishes it was Talented Mr. Ripley. Like, it wishes it was Brideshead Revisited. Like,
Usual Suspects.
Yeah, exactly. But she works for that because she's played the Oliver type role before, and she's playing off of him so well.
Mm-hmm.
The sister character.
Venetia.
Venetia.
And the dad
and the father.
Incredible.
Yeah. Okay. And he's scamming his way through this family while lusting after
everyone.
All of them.
Right. Or truly lusting after no one but truly Felix. Like, all of the lust that he enacts around Felix all seems like a means to an end.
But that's why,
also,
like,
why are they all allowing him to violate them? Like, what is
happening? Well, because they're all needy. They all have these gaping holes.
And also, they're all so protected that no one actually thinks to try to, like, break through.
But this
is why... Except for the character who has his own little relationship with, like, infiltration.
Sure. Yeah. This is why, ultimately, Oliver clearing everyone, including, spoiler, killing Felix...
Yeah.
Doesn't quite make sense. He should have killed everyone else
but Felix,
and Felix would have needed him in some way. Like, that's why I'm like, were we supposed to feel like, was he always like, what,
he just wants real estate?
What,
he's just a real estate
was
guy?
Was Felix his one true
he's literally
person?
Just like marking up his copy of World of Interiors. Like, he's literally just like, oh, this house looks great, wonder what family owns it. Guess I'll just apply to Oxford to befriend the child of this family and then systematically murder all of them.
Right. Was interesting how
big Hamish Bowles hours.
Even though Elordi is the heartthrob in this film, both in the film and in real life,
yeah,
Barry gets all of the nudity, basically all of the sexuality, multiple full frontal scenes,
including a extended dance at the end to Sophie Ellis Bextor's Murder on the Dance Floor, a great song.
Let's listen to a little of
I would love
Murder
to
on the Dance Floor, which I've seen people call, and I agree, may just be the Kate Bush running up that hill of 2024.
Yeah,
like, I feel like this song has juice.
I agree.
And could really
rise
up.
Yeah, yeah. Murder on the dance floor, but you better not kill. You better not steal the moves, DJ.
Gonna burn this goddamn house right down. What do you think of the music in this in general? The period specific / not quite historically accurate.
Yeah, so it's
in Beastly's soundtrack.
Clearly it's bonkerific. There is some disagreement over what year the film takes place.
Sure.
When it says class of 2006, you are of the mindset that is the arriving class of 2006.
I think that's how it works in the UK, but only one of us went to school there, so.
I dropped out, for what it's worth. I dropped out before I learned that particular detail. So either it takes place in 2002/3 or in 2006. The music is bonkerific. The karaoke section to Flo Rida's Low.
Yeah.
I mean, a great song, admittedly. Yeah. Very, very intense.
There's some arcade fire.
There's some arcade fire.
Which MGMT, I think, is anachronistic.
MGMT also.
Definitely some MGMT.
The Sophie Ellis Bextor thing, obviously, that's not in situ music. That's soundtrack music. It reminded me a lot, frankly, of Sofia Coppola films in terms of how it weaponizes music. In terms of it always feels slightly out of place. It is both like driving narrative and also so overpowering that you have to stop and almost think, like, why is this song so oppressive in this moment? And is it compensating for something that's lacking in the film? Now, I don't want to go so far as to say, like, Emerald Fennell is, like, as great a filmmaker as Sofia Coppola, but...
There's much more exposition in this movie.
Yes.
And much more plot in general.
But I think, like, the ethereality of a Sofia Coppola film is its intent. This feels like maybe, I mean, dare I say this film should have been longer? So that
That's insane.
I'm just saying, so that more could clearly happen. Because you have about 60 to 80 minutes of, like, fairly straightforward, like, it's a love story. They're falling in love with each other, literally or metaphorically.
Yeah.
And then for an hour, it's just like, and then I killed them.
The third act is very rushed.
Real wild.
Yes. What did you make of Elordi's British accent, which he also uses in The Sweeties, the other movie we both saw him in over the break? Well, okay, the weirdest thing about Elordi, bar none, is that he's
Australian.
Yeah. Great American accent, I think, in Euphoria.
Yes. Worst accent, Priscilla. Better accent. I know we're going to disagree on this.
You got to leave the man alone. He played Elvis well for somebody who's only ever seen Lilo and Stitch.
I don't accept that as an excuse. I appreciate that Jacob Elordi moves through the world with such grace and such ease that he can just wake up one day and be like, today I'm playing Elvis. And then that's fine. Like, that's great. It must be nice.
Yeah.
There was, as a sidebar, and we should get to the Barry Keoghan Golden Globes fit. but there was, shout out to our friends of Throwing Fits. They have their year-end awards. And, like, Jacob Elordi was voted for like best fits for celebrity.
In first place with 13.4% of the vote, Jacob Elordi, who last year polled at 2.6% of the vote.
That's crazy.
And then I saw someone on TikTok basically be like, this guy doesn't know how to dress. And it's basically because Jacob Elordi is just respectfully tall and like really well built and can wear like essentially what you or I are wearing, and people be like, that's an amazing outfit.
He's got that on.
Do people actually like these fits, or is he just another tall, conventionally attractive man that is just putting clothes on? It might be that.
Looking to sell your car? Carvana makes it easy. Enter your license plate or VIN, answer a few quick questions, and you can get a real offer that is good for 7 days in just minutes. That's not all. Carvana is dedicated to making car selling easy. No need to get up. Carvana will pick up your car from your home after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today to sell your car without ever leaving the comfort of home.
I'm David Marchese.
And I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro.
And we're the hosts of The Interview from The New York Times.
David and I have spent our careers interviewing some of the most interesting and influential people in the world.
Which means we know when to ask tough questions and when to just sit back and listen.
And now we've teamed up to have these conversations every week. We'll try to reveal something about the people shaping our world.
And we'll get some great stories from them, too.
It's The Interview from The New York Times. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how Jacob Elordi is moving through the world, like seeming best dressed, but actually not doing a whole lot. That's how I feel how he was, respectfully, in Priscilla, less so in Euphoria. And I think that's how he was in The Sweet East, and less Saltburn is. I feel like he's working the hardest in Saltburn, but the shtick with Jacob Elordi, and this is where the heartthrob thing comes in. It's like, is he working hard? Is working hard in essence taking away, like, the harder he works, the less appealing he is.
Right, and that's really why Barry Keoghan is both a character actor and, to me, not a heartthrob or a leading man, is because
he'll work.
Yes, because he's always working so hard. Like,
but it's just because you see the musculature and you see, like, you sense the physicality of him.
And, like, you know, he's always playing extreme characters. Like, in Banshees of Inisherin, he's like, he's doing a really intense thing playing like this sad town fool.
Was he a boxer?
No, like in real
life.
He does have that sort
of
like.
No, serious question.
I don't know.
Okay.
Give a quick take on his fit for the Golden Globes.
Okay.
And then we'll talk a little bit about The Sweet East.
Okay, so I have a couple things about this fit. This is important stuff, right? Yeah. So Barry Keoghan was one of a few celebrities wearing Louis Vuitton on the red carpet. He was wearing red. He was wearing a kind of mismatched jacket pant combo.
Maybe he was wearing fake tan.
I can't speak on that. Maybe like a peasant collar. I can't quite remember what the collar situation was. A little bit of a brooch action. The pants hit the boot in like a dismal fashion. The cut, I thought, was awkward. And also like the thing about the way that Pharrell's LV is like playing with pattern and texture. It's almost like too loud, and it's he was wearing like a downplayed version of a very loud pattern, and I just think like of all the LV fits in there, I think there were a couple ones. Coleman Domingo, who we'll talk about probably a little bit later, had the most elegant application of like what Pharrell is trying to do, but the Barry Keoghan thing, great choice of color, fit was a real challenge. This, whatever's happening here, real bad choice.
I appreciate you taking this seriously. Man looked insane.
I don't think he looked insane. I just think
the jokes were great. I'll say this.
The jokes were great.
The internet jokes were great.
The memes were great. The tweets were great.
Big disappointment.
I don't think that outfit suits his stature.
Fair
I think
enough.
They could have dressed him in a way that emphasized his physicality better rather than over it. Like, it felt like it was at war. He was at war with the jacket. Sorry, this is what I do.
I know.
That's what I just do in my house.
I know.
We just do it on camera, but I can do this at home.
The real twist was that first he was supposed to show up with Sabrina Carpenter, according to...
Oh, yes.
He was supposed to debut...
Yes, right.
With Sabrina Carpenter, alleged subject of Driver's License.
Yes.
And maybe some other Olivia Rodrigo songs. Mm-hmm. Singer herself. Quite a good album, I thought.
Better than I would have expected.
What's it called? Emails I Never Sent.
Sure.
Something like that. If not, so. Great title. Yeah. Take it.
Yes. I should use it. Chapel Roan.
It was in the gossip press that they were going to show up together.
Tate McRae. You know, I never said best album of 2024.
And then they were not on the carpet together after all, but allegedly together.
Great. Do you think she saw the jacket? I was just like, like, not today, buddy. Tighten it up.
I like that.
Yeah.
Alordi in the Sweet East.
I don't think she'd be scared. I think she's really braver than you think.
The election was a pre-scripted puppet show, just like every year.
No, you two are a complete pair of cosmopolitan snobs. You know that, yeah?
I need to know what's going on down in that basement now.
Relatively small role in a relatively small movie.
Right.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yes, and also poking fun at the type, at a Jacob Elordi type.
Yes.
Which, Jacob Elordi's been famous for about 25 minutes.
And he's already doing
meta-narrative already, which is great. But the thing about Jacob Elordi, you don't overemphasize him because he's literally, not only is he physically taking up a lot of space, but I do find him to be like a very graceful physical presence on screen. And he's drawing you in to him with not a lot of movement. And in a film like The Sweet East, which is small, which is scrappy, non-linear.
Sure. Vignettes.
Sure. Yeah. Very.
Yeah.
My vignettes get vignettes. Too much Jacob Elordi would absolutely destabilize the film.
Right.
How does Jacob Elordi end up in this film?
Well, we should talk about that because I think there's a lot of people in this film.
Everyone's in this film. You were great in this film.
Thanks.
Just for the record. I thought you were spectacular.
A lot of people at various levels of come up. So this is, you know what I mean? Like they're all going somewhere. This is a film by
You Babe Ruthing it?
Yeah. I'm calling it. Yeah. This is a film by Sean Price Williams, who is best known for shooting movies by the Safdie brothers and Alex Ross Perry.
Mm-hmm.
I love his work behind the camera. I love the Alex Ross Perry movies, which most people do not. Not a lot of people see them, and most people who see them tend to not like them. But he's, I think, a genius. Sean Price Williams directs this. It's written by Nick Pinkerton, who's a film critic.
And Plus One, I think.
And many other places. There's some internet going on.
With the
making and marketing of this independent film.
Yeah.
It stars Talia Ryder.
It's giving 2021. It's giving big 2021, respectfully.
And this movie basically follows a young student from Baltimore on a class trip. She encounters a QAnon Pizzagate type event at a pizzeria / karaoke bar.
Shout out to Annie Milonakis.
Great.
Yeah.
Great casting.
Yeah, perfect.
And she escapes, and she basically goes on a Alice in Wonderland journey through present American extremists from Trustafarian punks in the Collective House to Simon Rex as a, you saw my napkin note, I wrote, wistful, pretentious Nazi. She spent some time with him. She encounters artists in New York, played by Jeremy O'Harris.
And Iowa Debris,
as directors, aspiring directors. Mm-hmm. And when I say American extremists, I do count
artists,
aspiring directors in New York City, independent filmmakers.
We regret to inform you.
She spent some time at a Muslim extremist camp.
Yeah, with EDM fantasies.
And this is like a recommended if you like Greg Araki and Harmony Korine. I thought the opening scene,
I thought it was recommended if you like seeing movies in an empty movie theater.
Some of that too.
We saw it on a weekend night.
Okay.
Six people?
Yeah.
Maybe? Seven?
Did you feel like all of them were there for Jacob Elordi? That's the real question.
No.
Okay.
No, I felt like the kind of person who was showing up to this film, like maybe low-key did not know who Jacob Elordi was.
Oh, interesting.
Like at least that was the vibe.
Right.
Like I didn't feel it. And Jacob Elordi, I mean, to go back to the heartthrob question for a second, him playing two type and thereby against type in this film, making fun of himself, like can you believe the Elordiness of it?
When they introduce him to the Tally Ryder character who's going to co-star in a independent film with him,
yeah,
out of nowhere, they ask her like, oh, surely you know who this guy is. And she's like, oh yeah, he dates that girl from that show. Like, yeah, it's like that spot on.
Yeah. I thought he was really easy in this film. And just to talk about the movie also for a second, I liked a lot of component parts of this film. I liked a lot of the performances.
Liked
Simon Rex a lot. I thought Jeremy...
Speaking of heartthrobs.
Yeah. Wow, deeper conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Simon Rex has been through a lot of era of heartthrob, and he had his sort of big return.
Put up Dirt Nasty album cover.
Yeah, I mean... Three Loco, speaking of Andy Milonakis.
Yes.
Play a little Three Loco. Barely legal, hotter than a jalapeno when she dropped to her knees and did the Tim Tebow. Need out, need out, neat, neat, need out. Need out, need out, neat, neat, need out. We're need out, we're need out. Look, mom, we're need out. Need out, need out. Look, kids, we're need out. Talk about a reunion.
Honestly, Riff Raff should have been in this movie. Yeah, I agree.
He would have fit in perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, if Harmony Korine had come in for a day of just like a little touch up work, like he would have found a way to put Riff Raff in there.
Yeah.
But
we're down the rabbit hole.
Oh, absolutely. But this is what we're good at.
Just like poor little Tully Ryder.
You mentioned Simon Rex. I thought Jeremy O'Harris also really good. And the thing about each of those folks is they're all playing with, in a sense, public images of themselves. Like Jeremy O'Harris is playing with a public image of
for a limited audience, but the exact audience who will see this movie.
Is for the type of audience who's going to show up Saturday night at 9 p.m. at IFC. That like they'll get that.
Yeah,
and those people also, I think, on some level, potentially get the Elordi thing if they know who Jacob Elordi is. But the ease with which he moves through the film, and you're meant to sense there's a fame and power imbalance between him and Talia Ryder, but obviously the film wants to level them or wants to, in a way, make her more powerful.
Because she uses her feminine wiles to
insert herself in a variety of unlikely situations
and also to get out of them
and to extricate herself. Yeah. And I think the film does a really good job where Saltburn always makes Elordi huge. The Sweet East does not make Elordi huge. He has a lot of calm on screen, but it doesn't make him invincible.
And then he's gone.
Yes. And literally doesn't make him invincible. You will not see the Sweet East, so I feel no qualm spoiling it.
Okay. Where in the Jacob Elordi universe does Jeremy Allen White fit?
Oh, wow. We're just hard pivoting. not at all.
And why? Well, I agree, but
okay.
Why?
Okay. Well, this is, I mean, I think the tug of war you were describing earlier between Jacob Elordi's like physical presence and calm and Barry Keoghan's like sense of always working.
Yeah.
Jeremy Allen White.
His weaselly energy.
And Jeremy Allen White, like very clearly. Falls.
I say that as a compliment.
Does he though?
I do. Great actor.
Jeremy Allen White very clearly falls on the Barry Keoghan side, both in terms of like physicality and also in terms of like that energy. Like if you watch him on The Bear.
25 pounds?
No, I ordered 200.
What is beef?
You still got that meat connect? You get $12.50 for that on eBay.
Boom.
You cut vegetables like a bitch.
Not system. System, baby.
System.
System. This is your brother's house. I was running it fine without you.
Why didn't he leave it to you then?
We're not Bear guys.
I watched season one, bits and pieces subsequent to that. It's not my A+ show. It's fine. At some point, I'll finish it.
More than one Wilco song to me is a disqualifier.
Chicago's
in a season
of
television.
Here's the thing. Like Chicago's
a tough sell.
That's there are some great record labels that have come out of Chicago that I do not need to hear a lot of music from in a television show, respectfully. But Jeremy Allen White falls more on that side. And obviously he's getting really feted for Carmi and the Golden Globe the other night and, you know, having his glow up, seemingly involved with Rosalia.
I mean, here's the thing. This man, like, you know, inarguably winning, right? If you read the New York Times last week online at nytimes.com/podcast, like and subscribe, etc.
Also on YouTube.
Also
YouTube.com/podcast.
You will have seen more of Jeremy Allen White.
I know where you're going with this.
Then
we were on the phone and you literally were like, have you looked at the website today? And of course I had looked at the website today. The drop down ad on the homepage is bigger than the homepage.
Yeah. Yeah. And every subsequent ad was also a swole Jeremy Allen White in his boxer briefs for Calvin Klein. You like big these photos?
Big marking mark energy.
Yeah, good for him.
Especially the video. I don't know if it's a TV commercial or an internet ad where he's like walking and disrobing and then doing pull-ups.
Yeah.
The big marking mark energy.
Right.
That ad is also on the primo place on Houston.
Sure, got the house.
Houston by Broadway or by Lafayette, rather.
Yep.
Has that primo place.
Totally. I mean, this guy, you know, you see the jokes online about the eye color. Like, you know, obviously now we've seen the rest of him. he's you know, he's an object of lust for the internet, especially, you know, IO at the Golden Globes, getting asked about it.
Constantly.
This was everywhere. He's, like I said, on the New York Times website, dating Rosalia, arguably the coolest woman working right now. You know, it seems like all they do is meet up in alleys and smoke cigarettes.
Just like cig ripping.
It's like there's the motion is there. And yet you get back to the Barry question to Jacob. Am I a leading man? You know what ruined it for me? What undercut it? Not only that I don't enjoy the Bear, but the behind the scenes video where they're like, it's like social posts during the photo shoot. And they're like, say hello to the people. And he's like, oh, I don't want to say hello to the people.
I don't want to say hi to these people. No, I'll say hi. Hi, my name is Jeremy Allen White.
And it's like, he does a sort of like awkward little to the camera dance, which like, sure, that's a really hard spot to be put in. You're being photographed for the biggest thing that may ever happen to you in your life and career. And they want to make like BTS content and like some assistant puts a camera in your face and is like dance, you know, be charming. But that's what a movie star does, is like can turn it on at any moment. And I just don't know if he has it.
You don't think that he's just in a kind of like liminal space between like, I never have to do that kind of stuff and okay, fine, I'll do it.
You think like a lot is being asked of him right now?
I think it might be an interesting transition point. Like he seems like a guy who's gonna go away for a year, come out with like a Colin Farrell type movie role in like 2025 or 2026, and maybe he'll have it down cold by
then. See, I just don't know that he has the range. It's like
you don't think he has the and again to go to the Elordi thing, the ease. So you don't think he has the ease.
What we're talking about here, for lack of a better term, is Riz. You know,
it's 2020. I thought we were leaving that.
Yeah, that was the word of the year.
Yeah,
and it takes a lot. Like Tom Cruise still has the mantle because nobody has taken it from him. You know what I mean? Like to be a male movie star, to be a heartthrob, to be a leading man. Like I had this experience over the break also with Adam Driver. Adam Driver is somebody who, from the moment I saw him in Girls, I was like, this guy, like he's the one, you know what I mean? Like he's going to have an amazing career. They immediately put him in Star Wars. He's had this run of leading man performances. He led House of Gucci. He led White Noise. He led Ferrari. Like, and I came out of Ferrari.
No one leads House of Gucci. I apologize.
I came out of Ferrari and I'm like, I'm selling my Adam Driver stock.
Wow.
Not that he's not a great actor, but he is not a leading man. He is not a heartthrob.
So do you think that Adam Driver...
He's a character actor.
But do you think that Adam Driver is Barry Keoghan in Jacob Elordi's body?
Yes. Yes. Well put. Thank you.
Not to be essentialist about body
types. No. But it does. But stature has something to do with it. And like, and that's the thing. Adam Driver is so good with his physicality and has been from the jump.
Yeah. Literally, Adam Driver on girls and the use of the body. Even like,
there's a moment from the first Star Wars he's in that I'll never forget where he's in a fight. I don't even like Star Wars. He's in a fight scene and he gets wounded and then he hits his own wound. And I'm just like, that's the best acting I've ever seen.
Yeah.
for some reason, killer. Like it just really stuck with me. But I just don't think, I think that he and Barry Keoghan and Jeremy Allen White, like I think they are fundamentally character actors who are trying to be made in, who are trying to be fit into this moment of heartthrob when there are people to whom it comes much more naturally, like Elordi, but or also, like Charles Melton in May December and in Riverdale. Like to me, that guy, like he should be on that path. He should be on the Jeremy Allen White path.
I only watched a little bit of May December just to get a taste of Charles Melton. I did feel the thing that you're talking about. I mean, I also think, I mean, look, we're talking about heartthrobs. This is like, this is an older idea. This is like a very white male. It's a retro idea. It's a white male idea. Like, this is something that Hollywood obviously has always struggled with. I mean, you can think about it in the context of like the 5-year conversation of can Idris Elba play James Bond?
Right. Which like
literally, like, I can't think of an actor better suited to play James Bond than Idris
Elba. And now we're gonna get Jeremy Allen White instead.
With Barry Keoghan as the enemy, as like
that's good.
Book it. You know, the idea that, I mean, it's an out, like, so my question is not simply like the old idea of heartthrob, should we dispense with it or should we expand it, but also is it dispense withable at this point? Like, you used to have big tentpole films, romantic comedies, action films that required some kind of like center force.
Right.
Maybe that's not what films, the direction that films are heading in. Maybe every film is just going to be like a weird Netflix box of like two guys like me and you being like, and then it's going to be like podcast deluxe on that. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, you're not a heartthrob.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. They did try to bring back the rom-com with Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. Oh, anyone but you.
Let's just tell everyone we're together.
What?
Could be kind of fun.
There's no way we can convince anyone we actually like each other.
Trust me. We're at a wedding a million miles away from home. Who knows what could happen? You'd be the death of me.
You had to tell, like, so first of all, you had to inform me of Glenn Powell.
Yeah, you don't know who Glenn Powell is.
I don't know who Glenn Powell is.
But you've since seen the meme where...
Yeah, he showed it to me.
We're just show on the screen where someone said that he and Sydney Sweeney look like mice who are enjoying their last hours as humans. but yeah, there's
yeah, he
like...
Yeah, looks like a... I mean, he literally looks like a golden... I mean, truly a golden retriever. Like, not in, like, a funny way.
Yes.
Is he... You mentioned he was in Top Gun.
He was in Top Gun. But that's the same thing. Like,
was he... How did he hold up against Cruise?
Well, the plot of Top Gun is literally, like, Tom Cruise being like, none of you young boys are good enough to take my spot, so I'll just do it again.
But he was playing the plane, right?
Yeah.
So, like...
Yeah, Glenn Powell as the plane. but so I think like we're getting a lot of this like this pendulum swing towards this retro idea of male movie star. And I don't know if it's going to work because there aren't enough pieces.
Vehicles.
Yes.
But do you not
vehicles
think that there's like
pieces?
But do you not think on some level there's also a cultural rejection? Like the fact that we're even talking about Jacob Elordi tells me that there's like a way to pachinko through all the kind of intense cultural skepticism about this idea, but the fact that it's only Jacob Elordi, like who
he's the only one cutting it.
I mean, we tried to make a list.
Yeah.
We didn't succeed really.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we floated Colman Domingo, who's having a great run, but he's a little older. He's a veteran actor at this point.
First of all, age is a number. Music is for young boys. What if acting is for older?
Well, it's notable that our remaining movie stars are Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise and George Clooney. You know, it's still the same guys.
Yeah.
You know, much like the problem we're having in rap. It's just like there is no
it's not next, like the problem we're having in rap.
No, there's no next generation of star.
We're gonna talk about one in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Anyway.
who I think gets lost in the shuffle here is Timothée Chalamet.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. Kylie Jenner's boyfriend.
Oh, the guy who dates that girl from the show. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. So Timmy was in Wonka.
Yeah.
I did not see Wonka.
No, I didn't see it either.
I do not desire to see Wonka.
Though I'm ready for Dune 2. I love Dune 1. But I feel like
I did see Timmy in some TMZ footage today. I did see him in some Golden Globes footage. The TikTok lip reading person nailed it.
I feel like he's in this liminal space where he's supposed to be the boyish, anti-heartthrob young Leo character, but he's not really successfully graduating out of that.
Like, is this a picking the wrong projects thing? Is this like, we dangle like a big franchise, Wonka?
No.
First of all, whoever sold you on that, like, that person should be president. Whoever sold you on that. But like, do you think that he picked wrong? That there's like, he should have gone in a more serious, right? Like, should it be Timmy in the Sweet East? Like, should he be doing the Elordi thing in the Sweet East?
I mean, he sort of did it in Little Women, and he was great at it. That was like an Elordi type role.
Yeah.
And he's the star of Dune, where he plays this sort of like angsty boy king. But it still feels boyish, you know? I wonder if the cultural current is moving in that direction, and he's sort of like indie sensitive boy,
he's got to bulk up.
I think he might have to.
Yeah.
I'm sure he loves his girlfriend Kylie Jenner, but also like
he said so.
Yeah, right. We saw it in the lip reading. It helps, I think, the image to sort of mainstream heartthrob him to date a Kardashian.
Well, I mean, I guess I sort of assumed, I mean, look, not that love is not real.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, but like, I guess it.
Right, it feels like part of the package.
I think they both are both offering each other something that they may lack on their own, or at least through their own cultural work product.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Maybe more effective in the sort of anti-heartthrob role.
Oh, yeah. I know where you're going.
Is Nathan Fielder.
For every person who thirsts over Jacob Elordi publicly, there is a mirror image person.
An equal and opposite.
Yeah. Who thirsts over Nathan Fielder publicly and has for quite some time.
Yeah.
On The Curse, which we've talked about a few times, The Curse is coming to an end this coming week. On The Curse, Nathan Fielder plays the most, can we say, cucked version of himself? Are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. I really don't.
Okay.
Which is the plot of the show, basically.
Yeah, it's fundamentally, it's both the plot of the show within the show.
Yes.
It is the plot of the show. It is a romantic plot.
Yeah.
It is a professional plot. It is a show about the relationship between Nathan Fielder, American heartthrob, and Emma Stone, America's sweetheart.
Truly.
Also depending which layer of the text you're reading.
Truly.
Is Nathan Fielder the heartthrob? Is he a heartthrob on this show? And he is thirsted after by a certain segment of people on the internet.
Sure.
And potentially in real life.
In real life, too, I'm sure.
I've got to imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine he's doing great.
This show has kicked him so hard so many times.
Oh, yeah.
Now his character in the show, the husband / co-star with Emma Stone of a reality show within the show about flipping houses
and making them eco-friendly. Yeah.
This show is picking apart liberal pieties like one by one.
Yes.
While abusing Asher, the Nathan Fielder character, the Benny Safdie character, his childhood friend and director of the show, is so cruel to him. Emma Stone, increasingly cruel to him.
Mm-hmm.
The question of the show is this in part because he was cursed in the first episode for being extremely rude to a young black girl?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Asher is supposed to be necessarily like a winning character in this show, but he's striving towards it. Like the scene where he's listening back to their fight recorded and making notes to himself of like how to be a better husband to Emma Stone. I'm just like, I think it is, maybe even if it's not the point, like helping to circle the wagons around Nathan Fielder as an actor and public figure, where you're just like, man, nobody could, like, anything you've ever thought about this guy, like, he's thought about himself twice as hard.
Yeah, although I did have this moment, especially during last week's episode, I keep waiting for him to have essentially a Barry Keoghan, the like the final montage in Saltburn.
Right.
Of like, oh, no, 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 you're not playing me. I'm playing you.
I mean, if he massacres them in the last episode, like,
could happen. Yeah, could happen. But like, I kept waiting for that, and he just goes deeper and deeper and deeper down the hallway of shame,
right?
And leaning into it. And you think that essentially is bolstering his anti-heartthrob into heartthrob credentials?
I do, and I think I felt that in the rehearsal too, where it's ultimately so self-deprecating, you know, like I still think,
and you kind of like,
yeah, like he's just like, you know, there are the scenes where he's in the comedy class and trying to learn how to be funny, and they're doing self-deprecation, and you know, he gets humiliated about his manhood. And the list that he keeps of like how to be funny is like stuff that he has employed in his past work, you know, like, and I just, yeah, I feel like he is the Barry Keoghan broken bird that like people want to rub his back, and tell him it's going to be okay.
So here's the real question. Like, are we going to see Hitch 2 starring Jacob Elordi and Nathan Fielder?
Oh my God, that's such a good idea. I don't always say that to you, John. It's a really good idea.
I don't know which part of that I liked more, the fact that you like the idea or that you admitted that you don't always say that
just
to me.
That was a pure reaction.
Bursting with good ideas.
Yeah.
So anyway, book that. Hitch 2, Jacob Elordi, Nathan Fielder. Are those two on some kind of collision course? Because I wouldn't say that otherwise. I wouldn't say that if the Sweet East didn't exist.
Okay.
Because again,
it shows that Elordi wants to play in the mud a little bit.
Yeah, and we didn't really address how Jacob Elordi ends up in the Sweet East. Like, yeah, as like a matter of casting.
Right.
Like, I genuinely don't know.
I think there's enough cool people. And the Euphoria universe, Jeremy O'Harris.
Yeah.
You know, okay, like, I think, fair. Like, this is a social scene in addition to a cast of collaborators. Yeah, but yeah, it overlaps certainly with Benny Safdie.
Yes.
RIP to the Safdie brothers.
But it does make me wonder, like, I wouldn't have said Elordi Fielder 3 months ago.
Sure.
But I do think, on some level, what you're describing about what the curse has done for Nathan Fielder is sort of formalizes or crystallizes a thing that was already happening with him online in fan circles.
Yeah.
And so could that catapult him out of like high-end niche premium cable sitcom ? Into something bigger? Maybe.
I had a speaking of question marks about this whole show and his performance in it. I think ultimately he's turned out to be a good actor in The Curse.
Nathan Fielder. Certainly over the course of the season, I feel that more and more.
But what I want to say, which is a little bit of a swerve, is like none of this works without one of the greatest performances I've ever seen from Emma Stone.
Killing it.
Unbelievable. Like, speaking of like playing in the mud, like down to tarnish her image, down to like, play with the weird kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm blown away. And like the combination of her and Poor Things, which she won the Golden Globe for, maybe on her way to a second Oscar, and The Curse happening simultaneously, like, speaking of like, you know, leading man, like she is the actress of our generation. Like, I bet on the wrong horse. I thought it was Jennifer Lawrence. Bless Jennifer Lawrence. She's great. But like, it's Emma Stone.
The two things that do the most work for me with Emma Stone, besides her performance, her acting jobs, the eyes.
Yeah.
always. So much on The Curse is purposefully muddy, purposefully ambiguous, purposefully unsettled, like even down to the credits of like the words The Curse, like crystallizing out of some weird thing happening on
screen. And the reflections of the houses, yeah, and
everything. Everything is Funhouse Mirror. The one thing that is not Funhouse Mirror on the show are Emma Stone's eyes. And it's incredible when they choose to focus on them.
Yeah.
It always feels very pointed. The other thing is the footwear choice. Like different styles Birkenstocks in varying runs from like somewhat beaten in to totally new. Like there are a few things that are more of an indictment than a completely new pair of Birkenstocks. It's savage.
Here's the last savage thing they do with the Emma Stone character when she's driving alone, having a moment, and hopefully this might put a little pause on what this song has become in the culture, but when she's rocking out to Robin's Dancing on My Own, it was like, it was one of the meanest needle drops that I've seen in a long time.
Really weird. We all, respectfully, we all know that person.
Yes.
And we feel for you, respectfully.
The other great music moment, which we'll just mention and then we can move on, Nathan Fielder rapping, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. Credible.
Rapping the Pizza Man verse. Yeah,
totally credible.
From Dead Prez's Hell Yeah.
Totally credible.
Along with his camp friend, Benny Safdie's character.
Completely incredible.
We'll just play a little of it. Incredible stuff. Yeah. Incredible cringe. Incredible stuff. Totally accurate.
Yeah.
Come on. In the living room, on the floor, hunger pain got me on some migraine shit. I'ma maintain. Edwards got $2 or $3 to my name, but the homies are the same boat, going through the same thing, looking for a caper. We've been living in the dark since April. Candle, got a mid handle. Time by the mag, and he took a gamble. Nigga, get the phone. Get the yellow page. I'ma tell you, I'm gonna get paid.
It's been a couple weeks. We haven't done songs. It's been a weird 2 or 3 weeks. Not loads of things have come out, not loads of things in notes. Do you have something that you want to share?
My song of the week came out over the holidays. Mm-hmm. I feel like we get a pass in terms of freshness.
Yeah.
For the moment. It is by Starlito.
A recent topic with our Jelly Roll conversation.
Nashville rapper. Yep. Veteran, mm-hmm. Former Cash Money rapper. He's
little known.
Had a lot of lives. Yep. He's sort of like the flip side of Currency and what's happened with Currency's career post Cash Money. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Very prolific, very good rapper. And here he's paired with No Cap, who is a totally different generation of Southern.
What do you think the age gap there?
I know. Large.
Yeah, like 15.
And the life gap.
10 to 15?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This song is called Don't Cry. It's two different generation of Southern pain rapper mm-hmm. coming together.
Real weepy. Big weep energy.
Yeah, for a song where No Cap both does a great hook and has great verse of his own.
This is on like a Lito tape?
Yeah, new Starlito tape called Love Drug.
Okay.
That came out in December. And just hearing them together, like, I never would have thought about it. I never would have came up with it in my head, but it works. So this is Don't Cry by Starlito featuring No Cap. One day the sun will rise. Can't let them leave my cats close, so we know the open fire. Don't cry. Lito, it was my fault. That's what I thought. I ain't even know myself. That's why I fought. Look at my daughter eyes. Guess what I saw? A part of me I start to see. I'm undefeated. Self a time lost.
Okay, I'm also going to talk about
a rapper,
an unlikely cross pollination single.
What do you got?
Playboi Carti's back.
Yes, sort of.
Yeah, depending.
Sometimes.
Yeah, like some days of the week, some times of the day, I would say. There's been a couple, maybe three Playboi Carti songs that have come out in the last few weeks. We're going to talk about Backrooms, which is a collaboration with Travis Scott, who does not need to be on this song.
No.
Does not need to be on the song both for his career and also for Playboi Carti's career.
Yeah, you would think that Carti would be the one person who could resist a Travis Scott feature.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my thing about that, right? Like Travis Scott, one of the loosest collaborators in all of popular music, will do a record with us.
Yeah.
Do a record with anybody. But I often see Travis Scott collaborations as kind of like, that's my guy.
Sure.
We're rough peers. Like, I'm supposed to have a Travis Scott feature. You're right. Cardi doesn't need to have a Travis Scott feature. And I think this isn't the worst Travis Scott verse I've heard, but it's like not that necessary. Is it the first Ozempic reference in a rap song?
Good question.
Might be the first Ozempic reference in a rap song. But this Cardi part of this song is so good. The particular voice that he's using on this, and you know, you got to think of Cardi not so much in terms of verses, but in terms of voices and right. in terms of rhythmic patterns or anti-arrhythmic patterns, dare I say. Travis, him calling on Travis, to me, signals, it's maybe the first real signal that I've seen from Playboi Carti that he wants something outside of kind of like opium aesthetic land. First of all, the outfit he's wearing in this video is unreal. Like, I should have written an opium aesthetic piece last year. Like, the stuff he's wearing, the hood, the Balenciaga boots, the Pierce, like, he's doing incredible work on aesthetics. But he is also, through this song and at least one of the other songs that have come out, I feel like he's normalizing his vocal tics a little bit. He's a little bit more accessible. It's maybe taking me a little bit of adjusting to get used to, but calling on Travis, to me, is saying, I'm ready for the people who listen to you to listen to me. And that's not something that I think he would have done 12 months ago or 24 months ago. So it makes me wonder if there's a truly big tent future that he has his eye on.
And we might talk about this more.
I think we are.
On a future episode.
But for now, let's listen to Backrooms, not the Travis Scott part, just the Cardi part. Lights on my face, whoa. Bitches trying to chase, whoa. I ain't never flake, whoa. Tell me where to take, whoa. Tell me where the takes, whoa. Credit that take. We not the same game, whoa. Oh, I bang, bang, whoa. No, we the flying game, whoa. We too insane on the hoes. I took on my meds, you know. You ready to get sugary sweet?
Yeah, so we're going to do a little holiday hangover snack.
So I bought these at a bodega corner store not far from where my dad lives. I had not seen them before.
No doxing dad.
I hadn't seen them before, but they have been out. I think they've been out for almost a year, but I just hadn't encountered
these exact individual ones.
I just hadn't encountered them before. So they are a specific white chocolate, quote unquote, white chocolate
Hershey's bars
with different flavors.
One is sugar cookie.
Right. I have had...
And one is cotton candy.
Now, I have had many of the white chocolate ones that are
the cookies and cream is
the cookies
classic.
And cream is an A.
Classic. That was my go-to candy bar as like a 12-year-old.
And mine as probably like a 35-year-old.
Right. But here's, I need to give a little disclaimer before I try this, which is that it is January. I have not had refined sugar in a full week. I have not had a bite of sugar in a week.
Ambulances are on deck.
So this is about to explode my taste buds.
So, okay, sugar cookie and cotton candy,
which sounds horrific, even if I was up on sugar. I'm really worried for what this is going to do to me. Oh my God, the color. Do you see the color on this? It is the brightest blue.
Oh my God. It looks like... Oh.
It's like fluorescent. Should I skip these for my own health?
Maybe. You want me to do them first? You know what that reminds me of? This might have been more my childhood than yours. There was a blue kind of like sticky tack that used to be used. It is like sort of an all-purpose sticky tack. Like my elementary school or something.
Okay.
That exact color.
Not a food or a toy, an actual
tool. An industrial product. Right.
An adhesive.
Like a mass produced. Like something that's probably available currently at like Home Depot.
Yeah. Oh. It really tastes like cotton candy. Accuracy through the roof. I can't even take another bite because I'm not going to be able to taste anything for the rest of the day if I do.
Okay. The sugar cookie...
Wow, that cotton candy.
It's way, the cookies and cream is way better than this. Yeah, I'm really getting the plasticity of the chocolate with this particular flavor combination.
This is not,
oh my God,
this is not going to feel more natural to you when you take
it. Oh my God, do you smell this?
Yeah. It's nuclear.
They did nail the flavor though.
Man, did they? Like wow. It even feels like it's dissolving on your tongue in the way of cotton candy.
Oh my God. And also this, dare I say, This breaks down in the mouth like actual chocolate. That one does not. Sugar cookie does not. But this one,
I like the sugar cookie.
Oh, you're bugging.
I like it.
Oh, to me, this is the one.
If I was eating sugar, I would eat this whole thing.
And if I was eating sugar, I would eat this. Lucky, so lucky for me.
Yeah, lucky for us.
Cotton candy, 8.
Wow.
Sugar cookie, 4.5.
All right, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say the cotton candy is a 5 out of 10, and the 5 comes only for fealty to the cotton candy flavor. Sugar cookie, I'll call it a 7. It's not quite as good as the regular cookies and cream.
No, that's like a 9.5.
Yeah, but if I had this instead, I would be happy.
That's our show. Everybody, bravo Joe for breathing through his whole 30 health. We appreciate that. Listen to every podcast ever.
If you have to pump my stomach.
Yeah, literally, I'm going to take you right to urgent care after this.
Thanks.
Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. YouTube.com/podcast is where you get all this every week. Come check us out, subscribe, and like. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com with any questions. We're going to be doing a mailbag episode probably before not too long. So get involved with that. Get in the Discord. Get in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/podcastfacebook or podcast Discord. You want stickers, the few remaining t-shirts? It's thepodcast.myshopify.com. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roque. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. Special thanks as always, Karen Gans, Nel Galogli, Leslie Davis, Pat Gunther, Pedro Rosado. We'll be back next week.